on this week's show, NBC releases more details about its coverage of the Premier League, our thoughts on La Liga's virtual fans experiment, MLS changes Orlando tournament to try to make it entertaining, Serie A and Coppa Italia comes home to ESPN, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and this week I'm proud to say I'm joined by my guest co-host, Nick Webster, formerly of Fox Soccer. Many of you might know him from Fox Football Phone-In and lots of the great Fox productions from the past. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, Chris, and very excited. I'm counting down just 7 days to go.
That's right. This has been a long 3 months. There's always that summer break where you have, the season ends and then you've got, July and August to kind of just catch up on different things. But usually what happens, better than anyone, is it's either Copa America, it's the Euros, it's the Olympics, it's all or summer friendlies. So there is no break, and this has been probably the longest break I can ever remember. This feels like it would have been back in the 1980s or back in the 1990s when you had that long summer with just cricket on television, and that was about it. You're bored stiff. So what have you been up to these last few months to keep yourself sane?
Well, I would equate it back to the 1940s when World War II came along and football was stopped throughout the world. Like you say, the industry now, let's be honest, it's a 12-month-a-year industry. The players get very little time off. So, in some respects, I think they're probably very happy for the chance to rejuvenate their bodies and get a lot of physical as well as mental rest. Me, myself, no mental rest. I've been working on a master's degree on leadership and organization, and I'm right in the midst of a paper on the mentality of how to win a soccer game. So any of your listeners interested in a very, very long 40-page paper, give me my email address and I'll send it to them. It makes for some good bedtime reading.
Yeah, definitely. It could be, for some people, a good sleeping aid. For others, it could be like a really deep dive into kind of the inside of football, the mental side. So we'll get in a little bit, Nick, we'll get to talking about some of the other things you've been up to lately too. But first of all, let's talk about what we've been watching from this past week. And like you said, too, next week, of course, the Premier League is coming back. We'll have some news in a little bit about the TV coverage plans. But for you from the past week, what stands out? What things have you watched that you thought was worth noting?
Well, really, it's been the last 3 weeks with Germany back in action. I've tried to take in as many games as possible from the Bundesliga. And, of course, Tuesday and Wednesday, we had the German Cup semifinals. And I'm a fan of the Bundesliga anyway. And I think the quality of football, the technical excellence is outstanding. And obviously, Bayern and Borussia Dortmund are the cream of the crop. Just the ability and just the simplicity of their football is really quite breathtaking. And you don't really quite understand how they do it. And these last 3 weeks without fans has allowed me to really concentrate just purely on the game because there's no other distractions.
Yeah.
And they both Borussia and Bayern just play a very simple game. There's nothing over elaborate about it, but they do everything. They do the basics better than any other teams in the German division.
Yeah.
And so it's been a thrill to watch, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and Bayern too. That they seem to be so disciplined that even from the back, they're very strong too. So of course they score lots of goals up top, but it just seems to be almost a unstoppable team in the Bundesliga. Now, when it gets to the Champions League and we see the Bayern Munichs of the world and the Dortmunds of the world, etc., play in the European competitions, then it becomes a different ball game. The teams get opened up a little bit. You see some vulnerabilities, and it's difficult. I enjoy watching the Bundesliga too, and it's been a godsend the last couple of months since May 16th, watching these games. and enjoying it and learning more about the different cities, learning more about the different players. I mean, seeing Kai Havertz and other players just rise and seeing all this talent. I mean, Jadon Sancho, and you go down the list. But it's interesting, though, too, Nick, because this week, I mean, those German Cup games midweek, it was the DFB Pokal German Cup. And so it's not the Bundesliga specifically. It's the DFB, which is the even the Football Federation from Germany. And I guess the DFB feed, there was no artificial crowd noise at all. So you had Adrian Healy and Taylor Twellman commentating both of the games on Tuesday and Wednesday, also doing the hosting in the studio too. And to me, I haven't had a chance to ask you about this yet, Nick, but to me, it's just such a drop in energy levels. I mean, going to watching a match, I mean, behind the closed doors with no crowd noise at all. And to me, as the game wore on, it became less and less interesting. I guess in some ways it didn't help from the Tuesday game being Saarbrücken not being as good, of course, as Leverkusen. But I was disappointed by those midweek games. And I think part of it was the crowd noise. But the other part of it, and I love Adrian Healy. I have nothing bad to say about him. But he's very kind of bland, very monotone, not a good conversationalist, not kind of a John Champion or an Ian Dark, where you get the best out of Taylor Twellman. Just matter of fact, pretty boring at the end of the day. What's your take, Nick, on what you heard from the commentary and kind of just the whole production of it?
Well, I think you know, look, having obviously worked in the production side of things myself and had the opportunity to call games from stadiums and calling it from the studio, obviously two completely different worlds. When you're calling it from the studio, you're watching the same feed as everybody else. So it really does test you as a knowledgeable commentator of the game from a tactical point of view, because there's so much going on that you can't see calling it from, you know, the studio. And so, you know, in some respects, you'd love more from Twellman, because he does have that player's eye and will have an idea of the things that are going on off camera. Mm-hmm. Now, because he's the color commentator, he really doesn't get to have that opportunity. You know, I don't know what Healy's background is in terms of playing and coaching, and not that that is an arbiter of whether he's a good commentator or not. But I think also, you know, not having the crowd, and it's when you're working from the studio, the crowd really lets you know what's going on. You know, they just their energy can make a game absolutely fascinating or, like you say, very, very boring. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the Saarbrücken game, but I did watch the Frankfurt Bayern game, and I thought the first half was actually pretty boring because Bayern were just so dominant. It wasn't even funny. It wasn't even a game. But then about 15 minutes into the second half, there was a couple of, you know, I thought rather tasty challenges, and yep. the players started generating their own atmosphere. And it really started to feel, I mean, I know some of your viewers may go, puff, what's Webster talking about? But it started to feel like a proper game.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed it until Bayern got their, you know, second goal and then just basically did what Bayern did and kept the ball and you know, made it very difficult for Frankfurt. You know, I think even from the players' perspective, you know, we've been looking at the stats, Chris, and home advantage doesn't make any difference now. You know, the away team in Germany is getting more of the wins. Now, whether that is because the away team's the better team, I think we need to see more data to get a realistic picture of that. But, you know, I think that, you know, the players, they're getting on with it. They're not talking to the ref as much. When fouls occur, we're not seeing players roll around and try and con the referee, try and excite the crowd, because the crowd's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. So in some respects, it's football as it used to be. But, you know, the lack of crowd is going to be really interesting to see, obviously, the Premier League, because the one of the big selling points of the Premier League is the crowd and how it drives the game forward. So, Yes, more to be revealed in that regard.
Yeah, and we saw that too at the end of that Bayern Frankfurt game, where there was almost a fight on the sidelines, you know, on the touchline. It got pretty feisty. You could tell that Frankfurt were, in that second half, definitely going in harder on the tackles and just kind of, whether it was the coach at halftime saying, hey, don't let them kind of run over us. We need to, we were one match away here from the final. Let's go for it. And actually, the scoreline was pretty close. But like you said, in the first half, Bayern definitely dominated it. It could have been like two or three goals up for Bayern, but they didn't get it. So, Frankfurt had that opportunity. So the one thing about Adrian Healy, too, that I heard a few months ago, and I don't think I've mentioned it until now, is that according to my sources, he's going to be the lead commentator for the Bundesliga next season on ESPN. And I don't think it was any coincidence that we had Adrian doing the Tuesday and Wednesday broadcast with Taylor Twellman. So it's likely that the both of them will be paired up. And for next season, what we're hearing so far still is that there'll be four games a season on television. So it's not going to be week in, week out. But then the big question mark is about ESPN Plus and all those other games. Will those feature an American commentary duo as the commentators, or will they rely on the world feed? So if you're a fan of Adrian Healy, then for the Bundesliga, he'll be here next season. And it's not that he's bad; it's just that I think in some ways, I don't know. It's not my favorite. So let me put it that way. Nothing negative. It just doesn't excite me as much as, say, I don't know, a Derek Gray or a Nick Webster.
Well, I have to say, the world feed. I think if the commentators are in the stadium, then it's a no brainer. You've got to take the commentators.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost that much money. In fact, it probably costs you less money because there's far less production costs. So it's, the only reason for putting your own commentators in a situation like that is so that you can promote other shows. Mm-hmm. If you're using the world feed, they're not going to say, and ESPN coming up next, we have, the NFL or, a talk show or something like that. So, to actually bring in two people, sound guys, you could have TDs, directors, producers,
makeup,
graphics people.
Right.
It's actually really quite expensive to put on a production like that. So it's an interesting move by ESPN, and perhaps from ESPN Plus, which I get, and I think is a great value. Here you go, ESPN. Here's your plug, $4.99 a month. It's a fantastic value. I'm sure it's going to go up in price. But ESPN are making a play back into the football market again. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, and as far as cross promotion too, of course they got Serie A. They're going to have the Euro 2020 if it remains that same name for next summer. So there's going to be a lot of things to talk about, as well as World Cup qualifiers, Major League Soccer, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's a great point, Nick, as far as having the opportunity to have Adrian and a Taylor in the studio and kind of talking for a few minutes about something coming up that weekend or something coming up next week that gives them the opportunity there. So also this week, too, we had the debut of La Liga returning to action on Thursday. We had Sevilla against Real Betis in the Seville derby. And it's the first game with La Liga with the return. And what we got is the artificial crowd noise. So that was a little bit, that was well done. No complaints there. It was a little bit more subdued, perhaps, than the Bundesliga. It was a good background noise. But the big difference with La Liga for the first game and moving forward is that they're using technology. Instead of having the empty seats in the stadium, what they're doing is having it using virtual technology to basically, augmented reality to go ahead and actually put a mosaic of club shirts and club colours into the seats. So for someone that's in a bar and sees a television on in the background, hears a crowd noise and sees kind of this red and white kind of colors in the stadium, they might think for a split second, maybe if they've had a drink or two, that those are not, that those are real people, but obviously they're not. Did you get a chance to watch this one, Nick, on the and get your thoughts?
Yes, I did, actually. You know what? It's obviously a work in progress. You know, this was the first time they've used it. And so, you know, there was bod jobs here and there, especially on the replays. They didn't know how to put in the mosaic. But, you know, overall, I think from a visual standpoint, when they got it right, it wasn't bad, actually. It was done mainly on the lower tier. So on the upper tier, where the wide shot got higher and wider, you did see the empty seats, which, you know, as a producer, I would have been like, no, don't show the empty seats.
right.
If we go to the mosaic, I was actually disappointed with the crowd noise. I thought, you know. And obviously, you know, I'm familiar with the Sevilla derby. It's probably one of the hottest derbies in world football. I would have been tempted to turn it up because I was listening to it actually on a Spanish feed, and the Spanish commentators were so boring, which was amazing to me because, you know, if I'm given the choice between a terrible English commentator or an excitable Spanish commentator, I go Spanish every single time. Because I think they really have a flavor for the game. So I'm not sure who the Spanish commentators were. So I'm going to give them a big D minus. But I think the idea of putting in a crowd, even though it, you know, it's fake, I actually don't have a problem with it because, you know, the color and sounds of football are part of what makes it so special.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sound, I agree with you, it seemed to be a little bit subdued. And for Seville Derby with those two teams and in previous matches, it's been close encounters, really close matches, really fever pitch, a lot of kind of a lot of tackles. And I mean, we were missing that. So La Liga, which I know they listen, you know, I mean, turn up that volume a little bit, just give us that more of that passion. But the mosaic was okay. I guess I was expecting when they first announced it and said there'd be virtual fans, I was expecting something out of the FIFA 20 video game where you have, you know, these people moving or waving scarves or things like that. But I think in hindsight, it's actually what they're doing is probably better anyway, where it is more subdued in terms of the visuals. Rather than it being distracting, rather than you focusing on, you mean some, I don't know, some virtual fans in the stadium and trying to concentrate on that, rather than concentrating on the player movement or the shape of the players on the pitch, etc. But yeah, overall, it's a good start, and it's good to have La Liga back, and of course this weekend, Mallorca against Barcelona, I think on Saturday, and then Real Madrid is on Sunday. So some big matches there to look forward to.
Well, I'm just wondering if the Premier League are going to do that, because I'll be honest with you, Chris, seeing the virtual mosaic is a lot more pleasing to the eye than empty seats.
Yes.
Empty seats give, and you know, the Germans call it a ghost game. And to be honest with you, that's how it feels when you see the empty seats. It suddenly diminishes the importance of the game. And look, as Arrigo Sacchi said, you know, football's the most important thing of the least important things, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, for someone who's been starved of it, you know, you don't want to, and this is me just being very, very selfish, but I don't want to see football relegated as a second tier sport. And without fans, I'll be honest with you, it has a whiff of second tier about it.
Yeah, it's not the same by any means. I mean, that's one of the things that pulls in a lot of people that may have not been football fans or soccer fans in the very beginning, but might have tuned into, say, a Fox Soccer channel or tuned into an ESPN and heard the noise and the singing and the chanting and the songs and the banter. And thought, okay, this feels like a little bit like college football, but completely different. And it's definitely an attraction. But that's a good segue, Nick, too, because I just got off a phone call this afternoon with NBC Sports to learn more about the Premier League television coverage and what we can expect starting next week. And what they're going to do for the Premier League is they're going to have a tarp that's going to be on the lower seats around most of the grounds. And there, we'll have to wait and see what it looks like, but there'll be banners or there'll be colours or scarves. So you'll at least get some colour rather than just the empty seats. So that's a good start. In terms of some of the other things that they're planning, they will have on television, every game will have a artificial crowd noise. I think they're calling it atmospheric enhanced audio. And what they're doing is they've worked together with EA Sports, and they have about 92 different types of cheers and chants. and they're going to be using that and sampling that, but it's going to be customized to each ground. So, for example, if hypothetically, Nick, if you're an Arsenal supporter, and you mean you're used to hearing kind of the, you know, Arsenal from the Emirates or those types of songs or chants, you will hear those during the home Arsenal matches that are going to be on NBC Sports. And actually, this is going to be global too. So it's not just NBC Sports, BT Sports, Sky Sports, etc. All the broadcasters are going to be using that. And no virtual fans. So they are not going to do anything like that. So it sounds like they're taking what the Bundesliga has been doing and also now La Liga and enhancing that. And actually La Liga was supposed to be using EA Sports audio too. So it'll be similar to the EA Sports. But so far, I think the Bundesliga has done the best job of it. I was just blown away by how much better it got game after game. And even down to, like, say, a player getting a yellow card or like a feisty tackle and hearing the fans booing sounded completely natural. But that's what the NBC Sports guys are planning for next week. And then speaking of next week, so the league will return on Wednesday. Got two matches, two make-up matches that were postponed earlier in the season. So we got Sheffield United against Aston Villa, followed by Manchester City against Arsenal. And then on June 20th, it's a full calendar. And the big difference with this one will be that the games that are usually on NBC Sports Gold will continue to be on NBC Sports Gold. But NBC is launching their streaming package called Peacock. And what a name. And so those games that are on NBC Sports Gold will also be on Peacock. So for all the details about Peacock and what it is and how to get it and how much it costs, I've got an article that goes into a lot of depth, in-depth answers, questions and detail, and that's on the homepage of worldsoccertalk.com. So, Nick, based on those plans, you're okay with that in terms of how that sounds for the Premier League?
Well, it's going to be a smorgasbord of football. I mean, it's a good job I'm unemployed right now, because I would get fired from my job if I was. you know, I mean, I looked at the schedule and, you know, after the games on Wednesday, I mean, it's just, you know, it's every single day, which is great for us lovers of football. You know, I think NBC, look, they've done a tremendous job since taking over from Fox with the Premier League. I think they give the sport its due. They've put a lot of money behind it. Their production values are always very, very good. And it looks like they're picking up the baton where they left off. The interesting thing for me is going to be, you know, I mean, I would look at it from a bottom line perspective. Now, there's a lot of midweek games, and as you know, they kick off, you know, at noon and 2 and 4 and whatnot. Just in terms of viewership, I think it's going to just, you know, collapse. And they'll possibly lose a lot of money on it. How that's going to dull their appetite in the future, I think, remains to be seen. I mean, I'm sure they've put in budgeting plans where they realize that advertisers aren't going to be flooding their airways. So really excited about the amount of football we're going to be seeing over the next 2 months.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because what's happening in the UK is that, for example, the championship clubs, each of them have agreed to a rebate. So they're paying back Sky Sports. I think it's about £10 million. So each of the clubs is giving back money to Sky Sports as a way of saying, like, hey, I mean, the season got screwed up. All the games that are left in the regular season, the championship, a lot of them will be available for free or at low cost to season ticket holders. So it's kind of their way of saying, hey, sorry, but here you go. And I wonder too, this is probably something we won't hear much about, at least not for a while, whether the global broadcasters of the Premier League, whether there's a deal cut or some type of behind the scenes deal agreement reached where NBC Sports can say, like, hey, we were planning on having these games during the weekends, we were planning on having Championship Sunday. I mean, all these, I mean, great things happening, and all of a sudden this stuff happened. It's a good point. from NBC's perspective, what they're saying to me, and again, too, this is just them saying this, but they're saying that because everyone's working from home, or there's more and more people working from home, that the difference between weekends and weekdays are now pretty slim. So that they're banking on or thinking that those weekday games, those the noon or 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. in the afternoon, they'll actually get a lot of viewers for that. But at the same time, too, you got La Liga playing games every single day, I think, through July 19th. The Premier League is playing 35 live games in the next 40 days across NBC Sports once that starts up next week. And then you've got Major League Soccer, too, that is going to be playing their tournament starting in July. So lots of different things going on there, too. But, yeah, we'll keep a close eye on those viewing numbers and see how things go for NBC Sports and everyone else. Next up in the news, fans of Italian soccer will be glad to hear that ESPN has decided to move several key matches to air on the flagship ESPN TV network in the next 2 weeks. They include a handful of Serie A matches in addition to the Coppa Italia final. With the Italian season scheduled to restart on June 20th, there's a huge title race on the line, plus the Coppa Italia semi-finals kick off this weekend on ESPN Plus, with the prospect of Juventus or Milan facing Napoli or Inter in next week's final. ESPN's decision to move several of these Serie A games to television, numbering about 4 or 5, is a positive move for Serie A fans and soccer fans in the United States. The games that have been moved to the Big East ESPN network include Lecce against Milan, Spal against Calgary, Genoa against Parma, Atalanta against Lazio. And there may be more to come in the coming weeks, either to ESPN and or ESPN2. All of the other games will be on ESPN Plus, the streaming platform. Now, Nick, moving on to another piece of news, and that's Major League Soccer. Major League Soccer has officially announced that it's launching their World Cup-style tournament beginning July 8th with 26 teams. 54 matches will be played at ESPN Wide World of Sports near Disney World. The games are going to be played every day at 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Eastern, and 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Matches will be televised across ESPN, Fox Sports, and TUDN, and the winner will get a berth in next year's CONCACAF Champions League. Plus, I think there's going to be some prize money totaling about $1.1 million. And the final will be played on August 11th. What's your take on this, Nick, as far as what Major League Soccer is planning? Is this taking the best of a bad situation?
No, I'm not. To be honest with you, I'm not quite sure what the idea behind this is. And, you know, I mean, I know it's rude to equate MLS with Europe, but when you talk about $1.1 million prize pool, okay, that's a prize pool. Mm-hmm. That's not, you know, for the winner. And you go $1.1 million, well, that's someone's a month's wages in the Premier League, you know, yep, for a top player. So, I mean, it really is a pittance. I'm not sure what the idea is. You know, obviously, you know, no fans and the complex there, you know, it's not like it's huge stadiums either. So it's almost, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's almost going to have the feel of like a park kickabout. Mm-hmm. Unless there's some other way that they can make the images grander. So that's a concern for me. Concern number two is the fact that you know, these will be the first games back for these teams. I don't think they're doing friendlies, you know, other than in-house against each other. So, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, the quality of the football. And then the fact that these points transfer to the regular season, is that what we're calling it now?
Correct.
When,
yep,
at the end of the tournament, it just, you know, I mean, God bless them. You know, it's fantastic that, you know, MLS is back, but I'm not sure why they had to do it in this particular format that has a bit of Mickey Mouse about it.
Yeah.
You know, the draw, so you've gone, you know, Western Conference only, draw Eastern Conference only. I would have been more tempted to, you know, mix it up a little bit. You know, it's a bit lopsided. You know, you've got five groups of four and then one group of six. But, you know, once again, football's back. We're happy for that. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of viewership MLS gets, because like you said, you know, they're going to be up against the big boys. They're going to be up against the Premier League, the Serie A, La Liga, and the Bundesliga. All the leagues are back. They're all playing at the same time. It's great for football fans, but I'm not sure it's going to be great for MLS.
Yeah, I think this one really falls on ESPN in many ways, because this could be a make-or-break tournament depending on how ESPN does, because ESPN's taking over all the production of all the games and producing effectively what is a world feed, almost being a host broadcaster and saying, okay, we're going to take care of everything in terms of all the cameras. We're going to add cameras. We're going to have what they're talking about, having virtual advertising. So I'm sure like advertising signboards around the pitch and making that virtual so they can change that throughout the games. But like you said, Nick, it is very much a park environment. It is very open. So if there's a way for them to, because even the sound too, the sound is going to travel. I mean, you're going to have, you know, 22 players on the pitch. I mean, you hear them. And yes, you can add the crowd noise. It's going to be a lot of work for ESPN to get this to a point. It's probably going to be one of the hardest jobs they've ever had to get this to a point where it is TV production, TV friendly, and something that is a pleasure to watch, where it brings the viewer in, it engages them, it keeps them hooked, and makes it exciting. And this is, I mean, if ESPN can perfect that, then that will make a difference. If it does feel like more of a park feel to it, and you have the virtual signboards around the side, but I mean, the rest of it's pretty much wide open and you do the best with what you have, then that's not going to be a good look. But the other factor about this too, Nick, is the heat and humidity. I mean, that's the reason they're playing the games at 9 a.m. in the morning. But as you know, someone who's lived in Florida too, that even by, say, 10 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock in the morning, you're still, you know, sweating bullets or sweating buckets. And this is going to be a toll, even playing games late at night too, 8 p.m. and 10:30 Eastern p.m. It's still going to be a toll on your body. And the amount of games that they're playing in a very short period of time, there's going to be a lot of rotation. There's probably going to be some injuries, but this is going to take a lot of physical toll on the players. And I think it is going to impact the actual the quality of the football on the pitch. Now, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, you talk about product and, you know, let's be honest, football is a product. ESPN, they're going to get plenty of opportunities to get it right now. So let's just, you know, for your listeners, I would imagine the first two or three days are going to be awful.
Yep.
Okay, until they figure out how it's going to look. So I would say be patient. But to your point, you know, weather is a huge impact here in Florida. And these players haven't had a proper preseason. I think there is going to be a ton of injuries. I think the quality of football is probably going to be very poor. And I actually think MLS and ESPN are taking a bit of a gamble here, because this is, you know, one of their, let's say, marquee leagues. They're trying to create an event out of thin air, and if it backfires, it's going to cost them a lot of money, and they're going to probably lose viewers, because as we've just pointed out, they're up against the top leagues in the world, and you're given a choice between the Philadelphia Union versus the San Jose Earthquakes and Arsenal Man City. Well, you know, yes, I'm biased, but you know, even the non-casual football fan is going to flick from one to the other and go, oh, I know what I'm going to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of it, this is about the image of the league and the image that they portray. And in many ways, even going back to the draw that they had on Thursday, is that without telling anyone ahead of time, and there was a media conference call with the press on Wednesday that I was part of too, they didn't mention a word of this, but they went ahead right about an hour before the actual draw happened and said, oh, by the way, we've gone ahead and slotted Miami into the same group as Orlando. And even though there's going to be a live draw later this afternoon, we've already kind of established one of the games that's going to be played. So, I mean, yes, you can watch the draw and see what else happens as far as the other teams go. But we're basically scripting this. We're trying to make this, creating this out of thin air, trying to make this into something that's going to be a television product, that's going to be something of interest to the TV viewers, and being in control of this rather than it being more of a live draw. I mean, whether it's a World Cup draw, a Champions League draw, and the Europa League draw, those things are things you watch and it's suspense. You don't know which team is going to get pulled out of which which bucket or which bowl to actually find out. So I think in many ways, by MLS doing this at the last minute without telling anyone, wasn't a good look. Hopefully they'll learn from this. And really, I mean, Inter Miami has only played two games in their history. They haven't won any matches yet. Orlando's a pretty terrible team, unfortunately. So they're trying to create this, make this into a Florida derby. And maybe it'll be exciting. Maybe they'll pull it off and maybe it'll be great entertainment. But that's what it feels like to me. It feels like more like entertainment, almost like they've scripted this rather than it being based on sporting merit, where perhaps, you mean, Miami and Orlando are in different groups and maybe they meet in the quarterfinals or something like that, where they actually deserve to be playing against each other rather than being, okay, we're going to orchestrate this and put this together.
Now, well, the other thing is just that they're, you know, quarantine players and I think they're just, it's a big gamble. And you know what? I'm pulling for them to pull it off. And I hope they do pull it off, but yeah, I can see players getting into a bit of trouble, because they're stuck in Orlando at this complex, which is really, Orlando, the middle of the state. I mean, it's hotter than balls there.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. I would not be surprised if a couple of teams just roll over and go, oh, I can't wait to get out of there.
Right, exactly. Just to kind of escape from the heat and go back to their families. And for me, I hope that this works out well, this tournament. And I think a lot of that for me is I have a lot of faith and trust in ESPN to do the right thing. And I know that they will try their hardest to make this into a good-looking product on television. But like you said, too, the first weekend's probably going to be hit and miss. They're going to be learning things on the fly. But hopefully it'll all work out.
The most important thing for me, Chris, is that it doesn't look like a park with a game of football.
Right,
because I really think you're diminishing your product if that's the look we're gonna see.
Exactly. So moving on to the news, one more thing too, and that is that Telemundo is celebrating the 20th anniversary of Andrés Cantor, his career on the Spanish language channel. He'll be returning to the U.S. airwaves next week for Telemundo's coverage of the Premier League, and they will be broadcasting the Man City Arsenal game on the Wednesday. And Andrés Cantor is going to be doing the commentary on that one. Kind of a classic all-time American commentator with roots from Argentina. And last but not least, too, the Turkish Super League is coming back on Friday. The first game is airing on beIN Sports Extra and also beIN Sports Connect. And it's Fenerbahce against Kayserispor. And that's at 2 p.m. Eastern. Moving on to TV ratings, just from this past week, we just have some of the Bundesliga numbers. And as we've seen since the Bundesliga came back on May 16th, it started off pretty well in the 300s in terms of 350,000 people watching that. But as each week has gone by, those numbers have dropped and dropped. We're down to about 216,000 for Leverkusen against Bayern Munich on the Saturday match. And I think part of it, too, is that, the title race is effectively over. Bayern Munich has a chance to win it on Saturday if Dortmund drops some points. And I think fans are wanting whether it's La Liga, Serie A, whether it's the Premier League, wanting to get back into a league that has a real good title race. And then going back to MLS for a minute too, and that's the thing though too, if these games, yes, there's a cup at the end of this competition, but hopefully the games are kind of very competitive, and you mean underdogs, and you mean whether it's whichever teams are playing in the latter rounds, hopefully there's a good story there and some good football. All right.
Yeah, and I'd say to viewers, if you go to Google Maps and put in the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex, hopefully the pitches don't look like the ones I'm seeing right now.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I've been there a bunch of times too, because my daughter, she used to play DA, and she plays different leagues, kind of ECNL leagues and stuff like that. So we've gone there and played many, many tournaments there. And actually, the pitches are pretty good. I mean, they have some that are on the baseball pitches that they have, but for the most part it's full size, relatively decent. They're not professional level, but they should be good enough for the tournament. So listener mailbag, we've got some comments from some of our listeners. First up is Kyle Green. He was saying, I was listening to your most recent episode, and in reference to your discussion about 80s football in England, and specifically Man City and Chelsea before they had a lot of money, there is a book by Tim Rich called Caught Behind the Landslide about the club in the 1990s. Also, Clive Batty wrote two books about Chelsea that cover the 60s, 70s and 80s. The first is Kings of the Road, and the second is A Serious Case of the Blues. Also, a Liverpool fan, as a Liverpool fan, the book Two Tribes by Tony Evans is a great look, not only on Liverpool and Everton, but gives a great feel for the period, and specifically the first season when English clubs were banned from Europe. So what about you, Nick? Have you, you a Nick Hornby connoisseur, like kind of reading Fever Pitch?
It's a rite of passage to read Fever Pitch, so always enjoyed that. You know, I'm a big fan of anything to do with football. So right now, you know, in front of me, because I am in the middle of this Masters, I have Alex Ferguson's Leading, nice. And I've got Coaching the 4-4-2, and I have Leading Change by Cotter, and Coaching with Heart by Jerry Lynch. So lots of fascinating reading for me.
Huh, okay. Yeah, there's some good ones there. So a couple of ones I'm not familiar with, but it's always good stuff. Next up is The Original Tom. And The Original Tom says, thanks for the pod, guys. I find I'm not into the Bundesliga return as much as I thought I'd be. I guess between the long pause, the summer weather, and the lack of a title race, I've moved on. Hope Major League Soccer can restart and can't wait to get back to the stadium. Leo says, Mr. Harris, at it again. Bundesliga is not football as it's meant to be. You must be the number one Bundesliga hater in America. For Bundesliga, you criticize or look at the fact that Bayern almost have it in the bag. But for the Premier League, you want to try to enjoy the football itself and blind yourself to the big distance that Liverpool had. Bet you don't even mention that on the future podcasts, he says. You are a Premier League Taliban, as said before. And it's funny too, Nick, because obviously Leo got pretty upset there about my Bundesliga comment, which I was saying that this is not football as it's meant to be. Like a league is meant to be more competitive, not meant to be Bayern Munich winning 6-0, 5-1, 4-0, these games. It's meant to be a little bit more competitive. It's meant to be two-sided. I think Leo got upset by that. But the other thing too about the Bundesliga slogan, that their soccer is football as it's meant to be. To me, it comes off as being very egotistical and elitist. And what does it say about the German league when they themselves claim that their league is how the sport is supposed to be? And yes, I do love the Bundesliga. Yes, I do enjoy the Premier League, and the Premier League is not perfect by any means. But I don't know, that always kind of rattles me a little bit too, when it's football as it's meant to be. Like, who says that? I mean, obviously it's in their own interest to say that, but what for you, Nick, is the purest football league that you've seen or you enjoy?
Well, obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of the Premier League, but you know, this year's been a walk in the park for Liverpool, and deservedly so. You know, I understand why the Bundesliga has that slogan, and the reason being is that the supporters own 49% of many of the clubs.
Yep.
They still have a voice in it, whereas the Premier League is almost like the NFL these days. It's a closed shop, billionaire owners, and they really do as they please, whereas the Bundesliga, they have more people to answer to, should we say. Any league that has a race, has a good competition is going to get my attention, because the games are just so competitive. And it's back to the Premier League very quickly. It will be interesting to see what happens, because the bread and butter of the Premier League has always been the bottom team can beat the top team on any given day, and that usually happens though at home, because there's 40,000-50,000 supporters egging them along. When Liverpool play Norwich next time, are they going to absolutely ram them because they are by far a superior team, and Norwich won't have that that boost of playing at Carrow Road in front of 30,000 delirious Canaries? That's going to be a very interesting thing for me. I'll always be a big fan of the Premiership, but in my heart, Chris, I'm a football junkie, and I'll watch anything.
Yeah, me too. I'm very much equal opportunity. For me, I enjoy the Championship. To me, the Championship is reminds me of what the Premier League used to be in the early to mid 90s, where it was more upside down. You had no idea going into any match which team would win, and that's been kind of what the Premier League kind of has tried to paint as a picture from, say, the last few years. It's not quite that, but you do have once now and again, you do have a Norwich that does upset one of the big boys. But in the Bundesliga, that seems to happen a lot less. It's very, it's kind of the top, the Bayerns are kind of so far ahead. It just seems very unlikely that a Fortuna Dusseldorf is going to beat Bayern Munich. The gap just seems to be that much wider. So just a couple more comments from our listeners too. Robert says $1 billion. This is talking about Major League Soccer, and Don Garber mentioning that $1 billion as far as his estimated loss that MLS is going to get hit by. So Robert says that is some serious cash. Did MLS really lose that much revenue? If so, where would it have come from? This was probably a poor us comment during the negotiations. Now the league will probably be down big money by the end of the current season. As stated by Mr. Original, one of our other listeners, at least we will have our league back. JP Manning says, you two casually claimed that my club, San Jose Earthquakes, has no identity. And JP added some facts here. He says, founded in 1974, a two-time MLS Cup winner, have the leading goal scorer in league history. Matias Almeida is one of the most respected coaches in the Americas. We play a unique man-marking style you don't see anywhere else in Major League Soccer, EPL, or Bundesliga. And all these streaming firms you go on about are within 5 miles of our stadium, which represents one of the best and strongest metro areas in the world. And my comment, Nick, about this was, I think it was last week's podcast where I was talking about the MLS tournament idea. And I said that it's going to be hard to get national viewers tuning in for, say, a Colorado against Sporting Kansas City game, because locally within those areas, there's a fan base, there's a community, but nationally, there's just not a lot of interest. And it just so happens that Colorado ends up being picked into this same group as Sporting Kansas City. I did not know that ahead of time. But JP coming back was saying that we were saying too that the clubs that do have identities in Major League Soccer are more your DC United, from historically speaking, your LAFC in terms of the playing style, also Atlanta United, Seattle, Portland. But a lot of the other clubs are very much kind of one and the same. There's not much of an identity. And San Jose definitely have a huge history and a huge impact on the game in this country. But looking back, I think last year's TV schedule for all of 2019, I think San Jose was on television twice nationally. And both of those games were against LA Galaxy in the Cali Classico. So nationally, on a television wise, they're not being shown. So nationally, it's hard to actually really build a fan base or an identity around a club when they're not being shown on national television.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's next to impossible. Local markets will try and cover them. But I think, you know, with this, you know, World Cup style tournament, all teams are going to have the opportunity to play in front of a national stage, which, you know, may be a benefit for some teams, to go out there and show the American public exactly what they're about. But I always come back to the fact that, you know, these clubs haven't really had a preseason. I just have a feeling that the football's going to be very, very rusty.
It's going to be a roll of the dice, I think, in many ways, too. I think MLS is looking at this saying, okay, like, do we just call the end of the season and just abandon it and just come back next January or next February, say February, and call the whole thing off? But then that puts them into an awkward position because of the TV rights deal ends at the end of the 2022 season. And they're banking on that big time of having it be a massive contract, lots of bidders, and trying to have that contract, I'm sure, through 2026 and beyond with the World Cup, and combining the women and the men U.S. national team teams into that. So that would throw a spanner in the works in terms of the TV deal if they had to abandon the season and try and figure out what to do with that. So, yeah, I think there were in an awkward position where they had to do something, and this is the best that they came up with, and we'll see how it does. I mean, hopefully it'll be better than what I expected to be. I'm not super excited about it, but maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
And then last question from one of the listeners or comment was from Bill Reese, and he says, not sure if you guys saw this, but Liga MX's Monarcas Morelia are no more. They've moved to the Pacific Coast and now Mazatlan FC. Can only imagine the uproar if someone tried to do this in American sports in the middle of a pandemic. I have a passing interest in Liga MX and I know nothing about this until it happened. Barely a blip on the English-speaking sports media radar here in the US. Poor Monarcas. And this is something, too, I've been watching from a distance and kind of reading the stories about it, but it sounds very American, though, Nick, as far as kind of taking a team and then moving that entire team and that identity and moving them to a completely different city in a completely different region. Could you ever see this happening in any other major soccer leagues?
Well, it's the Art Modell mode of, I think it's what he did to the Cleveland Browns, right? Didn't they? They up to Indianapolis in the middle of the night and, you know, just snuck out of there. Look, I think we're going to see it more and more, to be honest with you, Chris. A lot of teams are going to be hurting after this pandemic finally goes away. You know, we're looking in England right now, League Two and League One have abandoned the season and because they, you know, the thought of playing games in empty stadiums, they just can't afford to do it. And I think this is one of the reasons why we're seeing MLS do this tournament. Because, you know, one-off games in your home stadium every other week, it costs too much money without any fans. The TV deal for MLS is what, $90 million for the year, which is, you know, or maybe even for 3 years, which is peanuts. So yeah, they've got to do something for the TV stations, i.e. ESPN. I'm actually surprised Fox isn't involved in it as well. But I think we're gonna see teams fold and they're gonna pop up elsewhere. So don't be surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's ESPN leading the charge with the world feeds and the production for the tournament for MLS. And then Fox will go ahead and whichever games they get, they'll use that feed, the TV feed, and then on top of that, then add their commentators remotely to commentate that game and add their graphics, kind of the score bug in the corner or the logo, etc. And the same thing for the Spanish network, TUDN, too. They'll do the same thing, too. Take the ESPN feed and then make that into their own for their own usage. So, we'll have to wait and see. And actually, by the time a lot of listeners will hear this podcast, we probably will have the TV schedule for all the MLS games on worldsoccertalk.com. So listeners, if you do have any comments for us, any questions, any things you'd like to raise with us about watching soccer on television or streaming, or any disagreements or any ideas for some topics to talk about, you can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. And Nick, so where can listeners catch up with what you're up to lately, and also some of the other things that you're working on, kind of maybe behind the scenes, to kind of give listeners an update on the world of Nick Webster?
The world of Nick Webster, yes. Well, I'm currently waiting for the USL season to pick back up again. I've been assisting Eric Winalda with the Las Vegas Lights. We had one game against the San Diego Loyal, the Winalda versus Donovan clash of ages. Yep. Finished up 1-1, and then the USL season was suspended. To be honest with you, though, we were far better than the Loyal and should have taken all 3 points. So looking forward to that. And then I am actually going to be the new assistant coach at UCSB, coaching the women's team at the University of Santa Barbara. That season begins on August 1st, so very excited about that. And as I said at the top of the show, I'm doing a dissertation on the how to win the mental game of soccer. So it's a big paper for me to help me get my master's degree in leadership and take over the world. I'm looking to really begin a sports psychology business, primarily for football players in this country, girls and boys, and adults and coaches. So any of you out there want some help on how to win the mental game and overcome fears, really enhance your strengths and hide your weaknesses, feel free to drop me a line. You can catch me at Nick Webster on Twitter. I am on Facebook at Nick Webster. And if you're really, really desperate to speak to me, get in touch with Chris and he'll give you my email.
Absolutely. And Nick, just one more question before we go too. So from the kind of the psychological, the mental side of a game, a person's game, whether they're a youth footballer or a professional soccer player, how much of a difference does it make?
Oh, it's absolutely huge. You can, at the professional level, you can improve the mental performance of a player between 5% and 10%. And then at the youth level, you can just start developing habits that last a lifetime, and that goes far beyond what happens on the pitch. So it really is an entire package of a different way to enhance your mental abilities in life, and a byproduct of that would be on the football pitch.
Wow. Yeah. So listeners, if you do have any questions or want to find out more information about that, definitely hit up Nick on Twitter, or feel free to email me and I can get you that information. So thank you for listening, everyone. You can get a new episode of the podcast every Thursday across iTunes and all the podcast players. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes, and enjoy your football.